Christ. Well, do please be seated. And you might find it helpful to have that reading from Psalm 14 before you. It's page 506 of the Old Testament part of the Bible. The year 1173, the Republic of Pisa decided to build a lovely, glamorous and exciting bell tower to show off their wealth and power. It was a republic. You can imagine they must have had a meeting one day about the tower, and they thought, well, who's going to design this thing for us? No one could think of any ideas. And then one person said, well, there's this guy called Bonanno Pisano. He's a sculptor. He's great at making bronze little statues. I bet he'd make a great 60-meter-high marble tower as well. If you can build a statue, you can build a tower. I'm sure that's true, isn't it? Let's get him to build it. Foolish choice. Well, of course, if you've been to Pisa, you know that it's part of a floodplain next to a large river. And this didn't seem to bother Bonanno Pisano too much. The fact that one half of the foundations of the building were on rock, that was pretty good. The other half were on kind of silty soil that gave way very quickly. Another act of foolishness. You can just imagine, maybe a year into the building, one of the builders comes up to the architect and says, look, boss, things look like they're leaning slightly. What shall we do? And the architect goes, well, let's just carry on, shall we? So don't tell anyone. Let's just carry on. And if it looks really bad at some point later, we'll just kind of start building in a different direction to make it look a bit straighter. If you notice, it's actually got a kink in it, the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Well, they obviously thought, well, let's try and build up in a different direction. And it just made things worse. Next act of foolishness. Well, it took 100 years for them to build their supposedly glamorous tower. And it was a laughing stock. It failed to impress their neighbours, their rivals. It was just a joke. The ultimate act of foolishness. Or was it? Because according to our reading from Psalm 14, there are greater acts of foolishness, the greatest of which, of course, is the belief that there is no God. Fools say in their hearts, there is no God. In other words, living in God's world as though there is no God is the greatest bit of foolishness anyone could ever do. I wonder how that sounds to you. We don't really see atheism as foolish, do we? We often see it as the intellectual choice for the clever people. You know, all the greatest, sharpest comedians on TV, they're all very proud atheists. The academics at our universities seem to be very proud of their atheism. It doesn't seem like a foolish choice at all. So in what sense is atheism foolish? That's the question we're going to ask today. Is it reasonable to be an atheist? So far in this Is It Reasonable series, we've focused on sort of batting away objections to the Christian faith. You know, there's no evidence for the life, death and resurrection of Jesus. Of course, there's massive evidence. We saw that in the first talk. Well, I can't possibly be a Christian because there's so much suffering in the world. We battered that one away as well. I can't possibly be a Christian because Christians aren't always very nice. We battered that one away. Or I can't be a Christian because I love science, and hasn't science disproved the Bible? We've dealt with that as well. We've done our defensive talks. Now we're going to go on the offensive. Is there anything that's worth believing other than Christianity? And today we're focusing on atheism. Is there more reason to believe atheism than Christianity? That's the question. And as we look at it, I think you'll see that a sleight of hand has taken place. You know, when you go to London, there's a street magician. He does a nice sort of trick. Of course, you know that it's not really a trick. He's fooled your senses, but you know, as a rational person, that no magic has actually taken place, but a sleight of hand has. And a sleight of hand has taken place over atheism. We've been tricked into thinking that this is the belief system that has all the proof, that has science on its side, that's rational, even that's moral as well. But that's not true. There's no evidence for that at all. There's no evidence for it. And the problem with atheism we're going to see is that atheism can't deliver the goods. I don't know if, like me, you buy quite a lot of stuff on the internet, or particularly like Kelly, all sorts of things come to our house through the post. The Royal Mail is very good at delivering the post, but some of the other companies aren't quite so good. I won't mention one in particular, but last year we had all sorts of problems with one delivery company. You know, things would be delivered to neighbours across the street. It says the vicarage, right? Delivered to neighbours across the street. Things would be delivered to the school. The address says the vicarage. It doesn't say the school, and yet somehow this company thought there was no problem delivering to the school. They were rubbish at delivering the goods. And you know, atheism is the same. There are three things atheism says it provides that it can't deliver on. Atheism can't deliver proof. There's no evidence at all for atheism. Atheism can't deliver morality. It can't say why we should be moral and what it means to be moral. Atheism can't deliver science. It can't explain what the foundation for science ought to be. Atheism can't deliver proof. It can't deliver morality, and it can't deliver science. Firstly then, atheism can't deliver proof. How many atheists does it take to change a light bulb? None, because they're bright enough already. Or at least that's how we're supposed to see atheists, isn't it? These are the intelligent people, the people who live their lives on the basis of evidence, who won't be tricked into thinking something that can't be proven. How many atheists are there in the world? If you know the answer to that, you have to answer it. We're sort of led to believe, aren't we? The other part of the sleight of hand is that atheism is normal. It's the default setting for thinking people. But you know something? Between 3 and 4% of the world's population are atheists. That's not to say people who would know religion, who still believe in God in some way, but there are between 3 and 4% of people in the world who don't believe that there is a God at all. And there are many people who've lived in former communist countries. Now, if such a small group of people have defied everyone else to say there's no God, I think the onus is on them to provide the proof, isn't it? If one of you said, you know, after the service at St. Mary's, let's all have a glass of gin after the service. That seems like a good idea to me. If one of you said that and the rest of us didn't agree, which I assume we wouldn't agree, maybe not. If one of you said, let's have a glass of gin after the service, the onus would be on you to provide the proof and to persuade everyone else. So the onus is on atheism to explain the proof for their beliefs. But you know, there's no proof at all. The only sort of arguments for atheism are not assertions of atheism, they're perceived problems with Christianity. Say, for example, that there's no historical evidence for the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. But as we saw, there's more evidence for the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus than almost anything else that took place in the ancient world. That's the kind of argument that atheism depends upon, and they're very easily dealt with. But where's the proof for atheism? Looking at the world around us, as we did at the family service two weeks ago, we encounter something new that shows all the evidence of design and perfection and balance and function and goodness and beauty. The logical thing to conclude, like when you discover a pocket watch on a walk through the forest, is that it's been designed by an intelligent, wise and good being. Well, atheists, in telling us to look at the world and conclude that it's all an accident, are asking us to believe something that just doesn't work. Something that we would never think in the ordinary course of life. A way of reasoning that just doesn't work. Similarly, everything in the world is caused by something. And if everything is caused by something, then the universe must be caused by something. You can't name a single thing in the universe that isn't caused by something. So why should you conclude irrationally that the universe isn't caused by God? They're asking us to think about things in a way that we would never normally do for any other way in life. In other words, there are no arguments for atheism at all. It's an argument from silence. It's an interpretation of a perceived lack of evidence for God. But as we've seen so far in the series, the evidence is overwhelming. Atheism can't deliver the proof. It claims to be rational, but it isn't. Atheism can't deliver morality. Now, let's be clear. That's not to say that individual atheists can't be people of great quality and integrity and charity. We all know people like that. But the truth is that the atheist's sense of morality is borrowed. It's Christian. Atheism can't explain why we should be moral. And the sort of moral virtues that we hold to in Western society, ideas like equality and tolerance, these are all ideas that spring from a Christian view of the world. Atheism can't explain why people should be seen as equal. In fact, look at the world around us. It seems like some people shouldn't be equal at all. It's only the Christian faith telling us that everyone has a value, even when you can't see it, that preserves us from dehumanizing people, as atheist regimes in the past have often done. Atheism has no ability to say what's right or wrong, what's good or bad. Your opinion is just as important or as useless as mine. If there's no God, who's to decide what is right and wrong? Well, atheists of the past have given two different solutions to the moral problem with atheism. They've said that what morality comes from either obedience to the state and making sure that everyone does well in the state, or it's being true to yourself. These are the two ways in which atheism has tried to say what morality is and what being good is all about. Both of which put something in the place of God as ultimate authority. Either it's the state or it's the individual. The state, that was the approach of Stalin and Chairman Mao. The idea was that the best thing that can possibly be done is to make society better for everyone. That sounds nice, doesn't it? The best thing is the state. If the state is doing well, that is a moral good. And that means if you're perceived to be someone who is harming the state in some way, maybe you're questioning the government, or you're not being as productive in the factory as you might be, or you're making money that seems to go towards yourself and not to others, it's very easy in that system to say, look, you don't deserve your freedom. You don't deserve your life. And one of the things that's often missed about the 20th century is just how many millions of people were victims of that view of morality in Soviet Russia, in communist China, and many other regimes throughout the world that have replaced God with the state. And say, if you're against the state, then you're immoral. And if you're immoral, you're not worthy of freedom or even life itself. That's one atheist vision of morality. And it's a nightmare, isn't it? The other vision of morality is to say, well, it's not so much about the state. You've got to do what seems right in your own eyes. Just do what seems good to you, even if other people tell you not to do it. And that's the way to be good. This idea stems actually from a German philosopher called Friedrich Nietzsche. And Nietzsche said, you know, the best thing you can possibly do with your life is do whatever you want to do. Don't let anyone stop you. His problem with Christianity, he said, was that Christianity puts a limit on your freedom. The truly human person, the truly good person, is someone who can rise above all the limits that society places on us and does exactly what seems good to them. That person, Nietzsche said, is the super person, the superman, who has a will to power, a desire which no one can stop. Dostoevsky, the great Russian author, explored what would happen if people lived like this in his great book, Crime and Punishment. I wonder if any of you have read that, but it is brilliant. It's a dark book, but it's well worth a read. The main character, Raskolnikov, is an impoverished student living in St. Petersburg, and he lives in the house with a landlady who is a nasty piece of work. She's incredibly wealthy, but she just piles up the money on the table. She's got a disabled daughter who she viciously ill-treats. And Raskolnikov, as he struggles with his own poverty, looks at this woman who there's nothing morally good about her. And he thinks, well, if she weren't here, life would be better for me. Life would be better for the daughter. And all this money that's being wasted because she's stockpiling it would be put to good use. What is stopping me from killing her? That was the question Raskolnikov answered. And of course, the answer to that is the sense of Christian morality, that even though she doesn't look that great, she's got dignity and value because she's made in the image of God. Well, for Raskolnikov, that's just a barrier that needs to be overcome. And he does overcome it. He kills the landlady. Not to tell you too much about the story, because I'd love you to read it. but it turns to chaos. Everything breaks down around Raskolnikov. It leads to chaos. And don't we live in a society where the basic moral idea is people should do whatever they want to do, and you have no right to question that? That's all very well. How do we then deal with things like polyamory? You know what that is. It's basically where it's like polygamy, except you have multiple partners. And this is the latest thing. I think The Guardian's got a bit of a campaign on polyamory, trying to tell us how normal it is and how it works for so many people. And if those people want to do it, well, who are we to say that it's wrong? Well, if morality is all about you getting what you want, actually, there's no basis in atheist thought to say, well, hang on a minute, isn't this a problem? Atheism can't deliver morality. So far, we've had one package that's landed in the church car park. We've had one package that's landed in the hedge of the house next door. Atheism can't deliver proof, it turns out. It can't deliver morality. And it can't even deliver science. Atheism claims to be the belief that is rational. It's based on natural science. And because of that, it's much better than Christianity. But atheism can't deliver science, just as it can't deliver morality. Science is based upon two foundations that don't come from atheism, but come from Christianity. Science is based upon the understanding that the world conforms to certain natural laws, that the world is good and ordered. And because of that, something that works in a certain way in one place may work in a similar way somewhere else. Those are laws that are in nature. And the idea that there are laws in nature isn't always observable, but it is an idea that comes from Judeo-Christian worldview. The idea that God looks at the world and said, behold, it's good. It's separated light from darkness. It's a world of order that's depicted in Genesis 1. And with that presupposition, that foundation in mind, great scientists of the past have persevered when the world seems chaotic to look for the natural law which explains how the world works. That is a foundation that comes from Christianity. It can't be proved from atheism. That's one foundation. The other foundation is the idea that the human mind is in some way capable of studying the world around us and making sense of it. Comes from the idea that we're all made in the image of God, and there's something that's good and purposeful about human life. Of course, without that, our brains, they're not things to order the world around us and understand it. Aren't they just blobs of chemicals and synapses and things like that? Can easily be deceived. There's nothing special about it at all. Atheism can't deliver science because the foundations of modern science are part of a Jewish, Christian, and indeed Islamic worldview. Atheism can't deliver proof, it can't deliver morality, it can't deliver science. So imagine a beautiful house. Well, the sort of Western civilization, if you like, is a bit like a house. Okay, it's not perfect, but there are lots of things that are good about it. And it's all built upon Christian and Jewish foundations, this house. The idea that people are equal, the idea that we should tolerate each other, the idea that we should be free. These are all Christian virtues. The idea that the law is more important than the government or the sovereign, the rule of law. It's a Christian idea that says that God's law is greater than the state's. The state can't get away with anything it wants to get away with. These are all Christian Jewish ideas. And somewhere in the basement of this house of Western civilization is an atheist sitting in the basement. They hate the house. They hate the fact that the builder of the house is a Christian or believes in God. But they're quite happy to live in the house, to accept its norms and its values, even though they've got no way of proving that they are true or claiming them for themselves. Atheism. It's a sleight of hand. There's no reason to be smug as an atheist because atheism can't deliver proof or morality or science. So the question is, why on earth do people become atheists? You know, if you look at the evidence for Christian belief in any serious way, there's no reason really to doubt it too much. And yet there's no evidence for atheism. Well, the reason for atheism comes not from the head, not from rationality, but from the heart. Atheism corresponds to something that all deep down we really want. That psalm, it says, fools say in their hearts there is no God. But the psalmist isn't just pointing the finger at people who just happen not to believe in God. He's pointing the finger at everyone. He says they've all gone astray. Everyone is perverse. There's no one who does good. No, not even one. That sounds harsh to us, doesn't it? But he's saying that there's nobody who's perfect. No one who really takes up the cause of the poor and the oppressed that God delights in. The problem of the human heart is that we want to live in God's world as though we're God and God isn't. That's the reason for atheism, and it's the motivation for so much in our lives as well. And yet the solution to that, we want to be free from God, is freedom given by God. Freedom from condemnation, freedom to be the children of God, precious to him for eternity, achieved through the cost of the death of his son, Jesus Christ, in our place upon the cross. Atheism can't deliver. It's utterly failed to do so. But Jesus Christ can. Amen.